You're listening to the Party in My Plants podcast, and you're about to hear from the queen of clean eating herself how rotten plants, hot sauce, and pizza are all considered clean, and how judgment, rigidity, deprivation, and $30 bottles of supplements are all not. Welcome to the Party in My Plants podcast, where I make healthy living as fun as a party so you'll, you know, actually want to do it and then actually feel, look, and live your best. I'm your host, Talia Pollock. Now let's get this party started. My guest today is directly responsible for the rise of clean eating. Before clean being associated with eating was as common as selfie being associated with stick, Terry Walters published Clean Food back in 2007. Since then, Terry's published two more clean eating cookbooks that are truly, hands down, the easiest, most fail-proof, healthiest, and tastiest plant party recipes around. And I mean, trilogies aren't easy. Heck, a lot of movies can't even be made into decent sequels. Jaws 2, Grease 2, Legally Blonde 2, Bring It On Again. But Terry's nailed three amazing cookbooks. And I'm lucky enough to call Terry a friend, a real friend, not just a Facebook friend. I grew up right next to her in the woods of good old Connecticut. It's really a shame that I didn't start giving two hoots about healthy eating until I moved out of my Connecticut home and into my college dorm, or else I probably would have moved in with Terry, or at least camped out in her kitchen, where I probably would have been eating sauerkraut out of the jar with a fork. You'll understand in a sec. Terry, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I'm so excited to talk to you.
It's great to be here.
Yay, thanks. So you know what? You were one of the first, seriously, to seriously take on this whole clean eating thing. Your first book, Clean Food, came out all the way back in 2007, way before it was cool and trendy to eat clean. I'm wondering, is it weird to you that it's now so trendy? Did you ever expect that it would be like this?
Actually, it's the greatest compliment of all, because it was never about creating a trend. It was always just about spreading good health. So the fact that it has done exactly that says we did the right thing. I did the right thing. So yeah, is it weird to see everybody talk about clean this and clean that, and to see signs and marketing? That's really weird. But I always, you know, part of me says, that's right. And the other part says, hey, that's mine.
Yeah, I know. It is the most mainstream thing now to say, like, oh, I'm just going to eat clean. I just try to eat cleaner. You know, I'm just going to go on a clean diet or whatever. And like, that was your term. You should have trademarked it.
Yeah, I tried. Don't worry.
Oh, man. Well.
But the thing that I don't like seeing about it is I don't like seeing it being misinterpreted and misconstrued, because obviously, you know, it's like the game of telephone. One person reads it and interprets it one way and shares it, and it changes and changes. And so it's been a lot of years and it's seen a lot of change. And clean was never about judgment about food or about yourself. It was never about rigidity. It was never about deprivation. It was always about bringing in the foods we all need more of, no matter what else is on your plate, really. And so part of me feels so great, because clean has changed as our food system has changed and as our needs change. It changes with us. But the other part of me says, now let's just make sure we all understand what it's not about, and that it is about just nourishing yourself with minimally processed foods, getting the most out of the foods. And more than anything, because that's going to be different for everybody, it's just about knowing how to make the choices that serve yourself the best.
Right. And one thing that you wrote in your first book that literally makes me scream out loud, like when I first read it, I was like, yes, 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 is, here's your quote: we try diets like we try hairstyles, and the possibilities are infinite. But are we served by adhering to one defined and perhaps limited approach to dieting? Lasting changes and health improvements are not found in fad diets. Preach.
No. No. Okay. That's good. You preached for me.
Preach. I love that we do. Everyone tries on diets like they try on hairstyles, that you can just, you know, be vegan one day. I'm going to be vegetarian, gluten-free, paleo, raw, plant-based, you know, lacto-ovo vegetarian. And those are all different things we try on, like hairstyles. And clean eating is not in those categories, right? It's not the same thing as saying vegan. It doesn't go parallel with superfoods or paleo. So how would you define clean eating? Is it just really eating a minimally processed whole foods, not the grocery store, but whole foods diet?
Well, it is, but it also, there's room for us to be human. So it's really about how do you evaluate these choices? I mean, ideally, we want to eat all the colors of the rainbow. We want to eat all of the tastes, sweet, sour, salty, bitter, and pungent. And we want to get them in a way that our body recognizes. And that's going to be minimally processed. So if you're in a package, you're already removed from the source. If you're picking up that package to begin with, then if you can, you want to be able to imagine how the ingredients grow. Because if you can translate them in your mind, you're going to translate them when you bring them into your system. But ultimately, you know, all of those diets and trends actually do serve us. And I think you and I have a similar background, our similar stories that brought us to this place, which is that we were both struggling with our own health issues. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that rigidity, when we adhere, and so I try and think of it as just not being rigid, but having a tight grip, whether you're following whatever the trend du jour is, it helps us stay the course and helps us figure out what of that approach is working for our bodies and what isn't. Because let's face it, that hairstyle, like, for a while, it looks good. But then you look back and you're like, oh my God, did I do that to my hair in the 80s?
It's true. You're so right. I mean, for me, going first raw vegan, so strict, changed my life. I mean, I was eating just the normal standard American diet and having such a extreme boost of nutrients in my system for a solid 6 months completely changed everything for me. And after a while, I've been able to gradually phase into a more, I guess, well-rounded way of eating. But I do think that how did you describe it? Not rigidity, the
tight grip
was
holding on.
Great. Yeah. It was great. And it taught my taste buds to like healthy foods. It taught my body to know how to do things with them, and it taught me how to cook with them. So I'm curious how you got into clean eating. How did this change your life?
Well, long before the books and long before anybody was even saying the word vegan, I was diagnosed with very high cholesterol. And I was in college knowing full well I wasn't going to be able to eat the foods that I felt just intrinsically knew were going to serve me. And so I moved off campus and I started teaching myself how to cook. And, you know, it was kind of an ugly process. There was a lot of trial and error. There were very few cookbooks out there that even eliminated sugar. Actually, none of them eliminated sugar and dairy. A few eliminated animal protein. So I really felt very much on my own. And so I just started cooking with what I thought to be real. You know, whole grains, a variety of vegetables, which was, I thought, you know, vegetables at that time, the food pyramid said, you know, eat your vegetables. So I thought if I was eating a salad part of the day, you know, once during the day, I was doing okay. Little did I know that there are so many different categories just in that one vegetable category, right? Mm-hmm. And it changes as we move through the season. So for us in the Northeast, that's a lot of change. Right. So, you know, it was a really long journey, and I started teaching cooking classes years ago. And
just a couple.
It was just a couple. It was never about these are the foods you have to eat. It was just how do we bring nutrition in and mix it with everything else? And that has always been what I've found is if we focus on bringing in and hopefully we can start with, for most people, it never hurts to start with dark leafy greens, but at least something in the produce section, or something that doesn't come in a package. If we start focusing on bringing in and do it slowly, everything changes slowly. Our taste buds, our lifestyle, right? You know, our mood, our digestion. Fast changes can be really hard for a lot of people to handle. So, right. You know, you focus on bringing in, and then over time, those foods that aren't serving you, they either move to the wayside completely or they just moved to a healthier place in the mix. And I think that's important, is it's a mix. Mm. So, you know, if there are things that you like, I mean, there are a lot of things that I like, and I don't make them the foundation of my diet, but I also don't deprive myself, because sometimes food nourishes something other than our best nutrition. And if we can embrace it and allow it to do so, I think we're all better off as a result.
So there are some not clean, quote unquote, air quotes, foods that you do eat then? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, yes.
Okay. And so what does that look like? I mean, when you indulge in something, do you then have to tell yourself, okay, I'm going to get back on track? Or is it just your normal way of life to factor in some non-clean foods?
Well, I think the first sign there is that if you're saying to yourself, I got to get back on track, but you've fallen off, once is fine. But if it happens over and over, I think it's the track that's broken and not you, because we all change all the time. So
that's broken, not you.
Yeah, absolutely. So in the beginning, I would say these are the foods we need more of: a variety of non-animal sources of protein, dark leafy greens, more variety in the vegetable category, right? Whole grains, nuts, seeds, healthy sources of fat. And it was defined for me. But now I apply that minimally process and knowing the source of my food, so that clean is about the best foods that I can eat. And where do I get those? Am I growing them myself? Am I going to a local farm? So for me, and you know, when you ask me, well, what do you eat that's not clean? I mean, yeah. I eat pizza all the time. I love pizza. And sometimes I go out for it, and sometimes I make it myself. And my pizza is pretty clean, not because pizza is or isn't clean, but because of the ingredients that I choose to put in it, you know, because I ferment the sourdough crust, because I'm using fresh vegetables. So, you know, what's not clean? I guess it's a good question, because they're foods that probably don't serve me. The Ben and Jerry's in the freezer is probably not serving. That sugar doesn't serve me. But let me tell you, I eat it with a lot of love, and it feels pretty darn good when I do splurge.
Totally. You gotta. And I always say it's about your most of the time. You know, our bodies are wired to be able to handle a little, you know, sad day Ben and Jerry's, or celebratory day like cake, you know, like they can handle it, as long as the most of the time are the plants, as I say, or the clean food, as you would say.
I like that. Mm-hmm. The most of the time. And the most of the time informs the rest of the time. Because what we eat the most of the time sets our taste buds, sets what, you know, it determines what fuels us best, where we get our best energy. And then when you really do splurge, after a while, sometimes you think, geez, you know, maybe I don't even have the taste for that anymore. And we don't have as many cravings, because we're just naturally in balance. And, you know, it goes on and on and on. So that most of the time really does create the habit.
Right. And I was my next question was, what is the goal with clean eating? And I guess that sort of answers it, which is the goal might be to make it a habit, make this way of eating your norm, most of the time. Is that what you would say is the goal of clean eating? Or is it to bring your health into balance, to elevate your energy, to shrink your waistline? Like, what's the point? Why would somebody listening be like, I'm going to eat clean now?
I think that the goal is different for each person. But for all of us, however we define it, I think the commonality there is that we're all trying or interested in being our best selves. And that is health, and that's energy. I mean, how we eat affects how we think. It affects our relationships. So I think it's being our best selves. And while I think goals are important, I think being in the present and that awareness and making good choices, just taking it on one choice at a time, is more important than looking to the end goal. So, you know, I know for me, if I start the day eating what most people might think of as the equivalent of dinner, but all of my colors and all of my tastes, if I start the day I'm like that, I'm fueled really well throughout the day, and I tend to make better choices. But if I start the day, you know, with empty carbs, it kind of spirals downhill from there because that kicks off, I'm not fueled well, then I have cravings or I'm pulling from my reserves. So I think if we can just look at it and know that, you know, every time you take something to eat, you're making a choice. And the more consciousness you can bring to those choices, the better choice you can make and the better you're going to feel in the long run. So don't put that burden of like, I've got to lose this much weight or fit into these pants or improve my health and I have 3 months to do it. Like, just set yourself up for success and then take it one choice at a time. That's really the goal.
One choice at a time. Yeah. And I guess your third book sums it up perfectly. If you eat clean, you'll live
well. Amen. There you go.
It all ties together.
I would like to think so.
So in terms of some clean eating choices, it's typically really easier. It makes it easier to eat healthier when you've got some great staples in your fridge that are just ready to be eaten. So I'm wondering if you have any clean eating staples that are just always in your fridge ready to be eaten clean.
Well, that's interesting because probably the most commonly found staple in my refrigerator is something fermented. And okay. And that is simply because we are not making all that those good probiotics on our own. We have to bring them in. So there's always, whether it's, and I make them all the time. It changes with the season, but it could be my homemade sauerkraut or some kimchi. It could be, right now it's kombucha. I could have some pickles. They're all fermented. And those are the foods that's my probiotic, my supplement. So that's the number one staple.
No, I do know that you're a kraut enthusiast. I mean, I've seen you eat forkfuls out of the jar.
People ask me, how do you eat it? And I'm like, with a fork?
Yeah, seriously. So, okay, what's another nice way to eat it? A, if someone doesn't want to go balls to the walls by sticking a fork in a jar of sauerkraut. And B, why eat it? Why are you so into it? Well, can't you just get your probiotics from a supplement in the store?
Well, if you think about probiotics in the store and you read it, it'll be like, you know, there are 12 gazillion acidophilus cultures and another 3 gazillion bifidus, right? And we're getting those same 2 bacteria. And that's good. That is definitely good. But when you make your own fermented foods, you're cultivating the bacteria that's already in the food and you have gazillions of different bacteria instead of just 2.
Strains.
Right. And so that's where we get our best health. And frankly, I can, you know, make that entire bottle of sauerkraut for probably 35 cents, where it might cost me $35 to buy a halfway decent probiotic. So I always opt for 35 cents is way better in my book.
Oh yeah. I think everyone can agree with that. So you make it yourself. You don't buy it?
I buy it sometimes too. Sometimes I feel like I'm buying it just because when I see a good product, I want that company to do well. So I buy it.
Nice.
And the reality is sometimes we have time to make it and sometimes we don't. You know, we make a big batch and it can last a good long time. But there are lots of people doing really great things with food. So,
yeah, like you.
And you.
So anyway. But if someone wants, if someone's like, okay, I want to try this. I mean, I'm not one of those people. I live in New York where we have all these artisanal things left and right. I'm not going to ferment my own. Maybe I will if you tell me right now that it's not that easy. Can you summarize the process or point us to a resource in either a book or your blog or somewhere where we could learn it?
Well, in Eat Clean, Live Well, there are 3 different kinds of approaches to fermentation that are really easy, 2 easier than any. One is the sauerkraut where you are actually just massaging salt into the cut up cabbage, putting it in a jar until all the liquids it releases push up over the cabbage, and then you let it sit on the counter. I mean, fermentation, like my definition of fermentation is rotting food to make it healthier and more delicious. So,
okay. But what if you rot it? Like, I'm always afraid when I've thought about making my own kombucha or sauerkraut, I'm always afraid I'm going to mess it up. Like, is there any danger involved?
There's not a lot of danger, but when you see things that look funky, you'll throw that batch away. It's just common sense. Anything below the level of brine is going to ferment, and anything above it, it's going to rot. So as long as you keep everything below, and if it starts to rot, you skim off that top and add a little more brine, you're good to go. And you can do the same thing to make your own pickles. you can take carrots, or I like jalapenos, or beautiful watermelon, like onions. Radishes, onions. You stick them in a jar. You can put some peppercorns and garlic and herbs in there, and you cover the whole thing with salted water. You know, a tablespoon of salt and a cup and a half of water. That's the ratio. And just cover them and let them sit for a week on your counter, and then seal it up and put it in your fridge and start eating them. You cannot go wrong.
I'm going to do it.
But let me tell you,
I'm feeling confident. Yeah, please. And also, how else do you eat sauerkraut besides a fork?
Well, honestly, my most recent obsession is sauerkraut mixed with a little bit of peanut butter and hot sauce.
What?
I know it's crazy, but try it.
Okay. We should all try. Everybody listening, please try it and let me know.
I'm scared. You're scared. What do you think? I heard that.
I know.
You guys go first.
Sounds fun.
And I like putting it in casseroles, and I'll put it on top of my greens. I mean, there's nothing better than like some sauteed greens and maybe some wild mushrooms all sauteed together. And then you put a lump of cabbage of sauerkraut on top of that, and then a nice poached egg on top of that, some avocado, and some hot sauce. I mean, now you are living large.
Living large. I love it. All right. I'm going to hop on the sauerkraut. Okay. Bandwagon.
So the truth is, I have this nice big refrigerator, and more often than not, it looks pretty empty because what's really in it are vegetables and one or two staples that I make at the beginning of the week to get me through the week. So as long as they're vegetables, I can do anything. And, you know, a can of beans in the pantry and some, you know, extra virgin olive oil or some coconut oil and onions and garlic and ginger. Pretty much when my family starts saying there's nothing to eat in the house, that's when I know I've got like a week left of food that I could bake.
Wow.
So for me, I just feel like if they're dark leafy greens or some kind of a green vegetable and those onions and garlic, that's what's always in my pantry and in my fridge. And, you know, this week, I happened to make some multicolored quinoa, and I made a large quantity of it. So we had it the first night with greens on it and chopped avocado and some pumpkin seeds and some currants, and it was really yummy. And then the next day, my daughter took it in a ball jar for lunch and with quinoa on the bottom, and she chopped avocado and cucumber and shredded some carrot on that and added olive oil and umi plum vinegar, sealed it. When she eats it, she shakes it and eats it. So, right?
I bet you got on the ball jar train before it was now trendy as well, right? Were you doing ball jars like for years?
We've always had, you know, they're really
affordable. Because you know they're cool now.
I know. I've heard.
They're really cool. So if you're those trendsetter for clean food related stuff, then I'm predicting that your sauerkraut trend is going to kick off in the next few years.
Well, I would never even pretend to take credit for the sauerkraut trend because I think Sandor Katz is like the god of fermented foods. So I'll put in a plug for him because he's brilliant and worth following as well. But if I can help support him as the king of sauerkraut and fermented food, I'm all for that.
That's great. I'll link to that and him in the show notes of the show. So you mentioned umi plum. Did you say vinegar or just umi plum paste? So that makes me think that, you know, your first cookbook, Queen Food, was the first healthy cookbook that I ever owned. I got introduced to a lot of weird ingredients through you in that book, like teflower, which is now one of my favorite things on the earth, and tempeh and miso. So, and umi plum. So I'm wondering, how did you learn to incorporate these totally under the radar and even much more so back in 2007 when you first self-published your first book? How did you incorporate these ingredients into your foods?
Well, it's kind of interesting because it wasn't 2007 when I started eating like this. It was 1980 something.
Oh, my.
And so in that time, it was kind of there were two ways of eating. There, health food stores were health food stores, and grocery stores were conventional. There was no middle ground there. So when you shopped in a health food, natural food store, it was a whole education. And when you shopped at a conventional grocery store, there was nothing similar to what you would find in the health food store. So when I first started teaching in 2000, we used to take road trips with my students to a really great little store called Bread and Circus. It was an hour and a half away, and we'd buy quinoa there and millet and umi plum vinegar. I think it's just, I would like to think that clean food had something to do with providing, kind of creating that space right in the middle where here are things that are actually readily accessible, especially now, because I can get almost any ingredient from any of my books at my local Stop and Shop. But so right. I'd like to think that had something to do with kind of providing that middle ground and allowing people to discover these products that have tremendous health benefits, and incorporating them into whatever it is they're doing, however they're eating. And so, yeah, that's
amazing. Really, you got me into my favorite things. Like I said, are teff flour, tempeh, and miso. Do you have a favorite kind of like weird quote unquote ingredient like that? Is it umeboshi plum? What is it?
Well, if you asked me tomorrow, it would be different, and the next day, and the next day. But if I had to like pick one, if you want to call it weird ingredient,
like what do you use the most?
I don't use it the most, but I think the umi plum vinegar gives you the most bang for the buck. And it is the one ingredient that I have found that the conventional palate just, it like overwhelms them with deliciousness. So I can steam broccoli or steam green beans and serve them to a, you know, to guests who would never dream of eating three quarters of the foods that I eat, right? And I drizzle a little olive oil and a few drops. All it takes are a few drops of umi plum vinegar over it, and they'll say, "This is the best broccoli I've ever had. Where did you buy it?"
That's the secret. Oh, sweet. So we all now have this secret sauce literally to making people go crazy for our plants.
My mother and I always say that umi plum vinegar and olive oil is like the new age version of butter and salt.
It is. It does hit that like taste bud. I mean, it's salty, but it has that. It's that, not umami.
It is umami is the word you're thinking of. Umami. And many people think that's a taste. I think it's just when all the tastes come together and you have that like when Harry met Sally moment of, you know, but with food.
Sensation.
Sensation. Yeah. That's a nice way
sensation.
To say it.
So umi plum vinegar. So umeboshi plums are, they're some sort of Asian plum.
Yes,
is that correct?
They are. And what differentiates them is that they're fermented.
Of course.
And so that's why they're one, high in sodium, and we use very, very little. And two, why they're such a good digestive aid.
Right. Okay. That's awesome. Well, speaking of fermented and digestive aids, talk to me about sourdough bread, because you make your own, which is insanely awesome. But in general, is sourdough bread the way to go when we get the option? Because it's fermented as well, right? So it does have some of that good for our gut bacteria in it?
Yes and no. So the process is, it does ferment, but we also bake it in an oven that's 500 degrees. So there's none of that good bacteria left in it. So you're not getting a probiotic by eating it. But it does ferment the grain. And there was a time when most of the grains that we ever ate were fermented, if not at least germinated, just by how they were, you know, taken down in the fields and left to sit. And they got condensation at night and dried out during the day. I mean, and then the combine came in and that all was shot. So, you know, even the container of Quaker oats years and years ago used to say to soak the oats for an hour. So that's the difference.
Wow.
And then people said, I don't.
Not the quick oats, like now.
People said, I don't have that time. So they stopped buying it. So they took it off the label.
Wow.
So
interesting.
The sourdough bread, we soak and ferment actually the grain, and it makes it a much easier grain for us to assimilate and digest. And then we make the bread out of that. So it's instead of using commercial yeast, which also feeds systemic yeast, we cultivate the bacteria and we use a starter. And that starter, I've had my starter for about 3 years now.
It's a long relationship.
It is a long relationship. And it is like a another child in my family. So it's a good relationship, worth cultivating.
That's a douche. That's so funny. So is this the same? Does this go for all sourdough bread pretty much? So if you're at a restaurant and they put a bread basket on the table, you can feel a little less bad reaching for it if it's sourdough bread?
Well, I hope that what people will take from my work is to know to ask, because really the only way you know anything about food is to find out where it came from. And that's why I always say closer to the source. You don't have to sit down at the earth and figure out what's closer to the source. But the more you know, the better choice you can make. So you can ask, is this a sourdough? Is there commercial yeast in it? I tell people all the time, when you go to the grocery store, ask. Ask every time for what you want, because once is a quiet voice, but multiple times and multiple people is a loud voice. And our stores and our restaurants, they are serving us. They want to know what we want. So, so with sourdough, if there's commercial yeast in it, it's not a true sourdough. The ingredients should be starter, water, flour, and salt. That's really all that it takes. It's really magic.
Okay.
Next time you're around, you'll come over and we'll make sourdough together.
Oh my God, that would be the best. I would love that.
It is a really magical process. And, you know, it doesn't work for everybody, but there are kind of three schools of reaction to wheat and to gluten. One is just a sensitivity. Right. So in other words, you don't have the enzymes or the ability to break that food down. The other is an allergy. So that would be where you have like an actual histamine response. You know, maybe you break out in a rash, or maybe it makes you cloudy thinking, or your stomach feels distended and bloated. Right. So, and then the third is an actual intolerance. And I think, you know, I've had people who I've taught to make sourdough bread who are celiac and have that intolerance and feel like it works for them. But I think, you know, the fermentation eats the gluten. So what I'd love, and maybe sometime one of your listeners will be able to get back to me with this, is to find some place where I could actually have my bread tested and say, okay, after 12 hours of fermentation, how much gluten is left? And after 24, how much gluten is left? And without that information, we really don't know if the sourdough is okay for those people who are intolerant.
To be continued then. So you mentioned eating food close to the source, and I would love to talk a little bit about seasonal and all that stuff, because your three amazing cookbooks are the only books on my huge cookbook bookshelf that are organized by seasons. And I love this because, like, when it's cold out, I don't want to just go to a soup section and filter through gazpachos and corn chowders, you know? Like, I love being able, and I feel so confident when I have a food that I want, I can just jet right to one of your books and go to the fall or winter portion and find a perfect butternut squash soup, for example. So I'm wondering, why do you organize your books by seasons other than to make me so happy?
Well, that's really my first goal, is to make you so happy.
Well, you do.
But also, there are a number of reasons. The first is that the foods that grow around us actually have the nutrition we need to stay in balance with our environment. So in the spring, for instance, we get all those little baby greens, and those are very cleansing and they lighten us, and they, you know, start to, and they're cooling. So they help us adjust to that change in weather. And in the summer, we have fruits and vegetables that are full of natural sugars and also quite cooling. And we eat them raw so that we can adapt to the warmth in our environment. And then as those plants die back, that sends their nutrition into the roots. And in the fall, we harvest the roots. And that's where we get our strength for our immune system to stay strong and healthy going into the cold weather. So, like, you know, Mother Nature gives us what we need when we aren't eating in season. You know, when you eat that tomato from halfway around the world that has more stamps in your passport than you do in the dead of winter, there's a reason it doesn't really taste like the one you got at the farmer's market. It also doesn't have anywhere near, if any, of the nutritional value. And not to mention, it's not supporting your environment or your local economy either. So And it's definitely not keeping you healthy. So, wow. So there are a lot of reasons, but also the cooking techniques we use are different. I mean, you just said it, like, I'm not in the middle of summer. I'm not going to sit around with a huge pot of chili cooking all day any more than I'm going to be drinking, you know, raw gazpacho in the middle of winter. So those cooking techniques give us attributes to the food that help us stay in balance with our environment also. So that long cooking in those cast iron skillets, they make us warm and they keep us warm in the winter, where, you know, juicing in the summer is perfection. I have a smoothie every morning in the summer because I get my nutrients, I put all my superfoods in it, and it's cooling and it's refreshing and it's light. And in the middle of winter, it's the last thing I want for breakfast.
Yeah, you're so right. I mean, another thing that you wrote in your first book, Clean Food, that was just like, oh, yes, was for most of us, eating clean is not as much a matter of learning what to eat as applying what we already know.
Right. And so that happens naturally when we eat the seasonal foods, because when you think about it, those are the foods, when you go into the produce section of your grocery store, you've got like the same players all around the outside, right? Like the kale, the lettuces, the carrots, they're kind of always in the exact same spot. But in the middle, where there are rotating displays and usually things are on sale, those tend to be the foods that are in season. And because we have more supply of those, they also tend to be the foods that are more likely to be locally grown. They're going to be fresher. They're going to be lower in price, higher supply, right? Lower in price. Mm-hmm. And so they're really a win-win in every way. And we know these things inherently. So we just have, sometimes it's just a matter of defaulting to just going with our gut. I as a health coach, maybe
literally,
maybe, exactly. Thank you. You might see the same thing I do, which is people come into my practice and they sit down and the first thing they say is, I'm trying to do this. And the next thing is, are you going to tell me to stop eating this or that I can't have this? Or it's an excuse. Mm. I only eat or drink, you know, 3 cups of coffee. And just the way they phrase it tells me that they know the things, the practices that are serving them, and they know the habits that aren't.
Yeah, Mother Nature knows too.
Yeah, and Mother Nature knows
is what you're
too.
Saying.
Yep.
You know, because you said the foods around us are exactly what we need to stay in balance. That was a really profound thing to say, because it's true. Like when I'm craving butternut squash when it's sweater season, that's for a reason. It's not just because, you know, it's served on the local menu and I'm like, oh, that sounds good. You know, it's what we need to be in balance.
Exactly. It's true.
But the problem is that I think, like you said about the tomato coming at us with more stamps than a passport, is that it's actually really easy to not eat seasonally anymore. I mean, we can really get berries pretty much all year round, or avocado, even though it's hard to find ripe a lot of the time, but you can get that year round. I mean, that's not even grown here in the Northeast ever. So what do you say about that kind of stuff? Like, do you feel that eating seasonally is best? Like, should we not eat avocados if we live in New York or something?
Well, there's food.
It's tricky,
there are
right?
foods and there's supplements. And so there's some foods that pack such nutritional punch that I really do think they're worth it year round. And when I can't get fresh berries, I keep frozen berries I keep frozen berries in my freezer year round. So yeah, I mean, I just wrote a recipe out of season blueberry muffins, because it's worth using those frozen blueberries and bringing them in. So it's worth it. But again, it's kind of reverting back to what you said really well, which is most of the time. And then if we think about what else do we need, like there are superfoods I keep in my pantry. I always have hemp seed. I always have chia. And the truth is, I almost always have avocados and garlic. You know, some foods, it's worth leaving your locale in order to source foods, because we gain so much. And let's face it, like our soil is depleted. There's no such thing as a perfect diet. And even if there were, your body or your environment's going to change and throw a monkey wrench into that anyway. So the more we know about the foods and the more we can bring these superfoods in and mix them with everything else that we're eating, the better health we're going to achieve. So it's striking a balance. There's no right way. There's no wrong way. And, you know, certainly if you're eating a tomato from the other side of the world in the middle of the winter, because that's what does it for you, that's a lot better than a lot of other things that you could be doing.
That's very true. And when you say superfoods, you don't just mean like the $30 packages of stuff on the superfoods display in the grocery store, right? You're referring to even an avocado is a superfood.
An avocado, garlic, onions. Yeah.
So it doesn't have to cost $30.
Does not have to cost $30. As a matter of fact, for more. When I travel, a lot of places you notice like, if you go to where the less expensive restaurants when you travel, you notice like what the people locally are eating. And it's always been so interesting to me that like the most simple meal, and this is what it looks like in my house, you know, rice and beans. It can't be more cost effective. If you have a green vegetable you can throw in with that, you can dress that up till you're blue in the face, but it couldn't be more simple. And that's a meal that's eaten all over the world, just rice and beans.
It's true. And here's the real kicker, you know, and this is something that I've had a huge question mark over for a long time and definitely go back and forth on. So tell me the answer. Local versus organic. When you have to choose between the two, which one should we choose and why?
Is no answer okay to have as the answer?
No, because that's what I've been doing. I'm like, I guess it depends on the circumstance.
It's so confusing. It really goes back to know your food. You know, there are farmers who use beautiful organic practices but can't afford the organic certification. And there are farmers and there are people who, you know, well, let's start at the beginning, actually. Let's talk about processed food for a second, because what are there, 120-something ingredients that are not organic that can be in packaged foods that are labeled as organic? So, and
I did not know that.
That is true. And so organic really is largely losing its meaning. At this point, what we know to be mostly true about organic is that if it is certified organic, it is not genetically modified. Okay. So there's that.
So that just means the organic label now means not genetically modified.
Well, that's kind of what I've boiled it down
to. It's going towards.
It's certainly where it's going towards if it's not already past that place. Mm. So to me, it's more important to know about the food. And so, yeah, I spend a lot of time learning about it. And I try and put all that information in my books so that people don't have to spend the time themselves. And that's why, you know, when I teach and when people pick up my books, I try and say, this is different than anything else. And the reason is because there is intention behind and education behind every ingredient. There's a reason. And when you're sourcing, if you can't go to a farm or a farmer's market, then asking your grocery store produce manager or the person behind the fish counter or the meat counter, whatever you're buying, the more you know about the food, the better choice you can make regardless of the label. And, you know, we started this conversation talking about labels and trends and diets. And so it's the exact same thing about the food. No label is listening to your body, right? We learn to listen to how our bodies respond to different foods by putting clean food in and clearing away the clutter of inflammation, of cravings, right? The more balanced we are, the more we are able to listen to that. I call it the nutritionist within. The same thing goes for the food. The more you know about the food, the more you know to ask, right? The more empowered you are to pick the healthy choice. And there's a lot of accessibility. It doesn't have to break the bank. It doesn't have to take a lot of time. I mean, one pot of quinoa to last the whole week. And, you know, we have a whole meal one night, we have lunches for a few days. And when it's starting to go and I'm thinking, oh, we got to get rid of that quinoa, then I heat it up for breakfast the next day with a little coconut milk and nutmeg and it's done. And then we move on.
So, we move on
to the next staple.
So it doesn't have to be hard. You don't have to sacrifice nutrition for convenience.
Right. Well, speaking of convenience, I was wondering, what are some really quick go-to meals that you have? I mean, what you just said, quinoa for breakfast, I don't think anyone would really think of doing that. So, I mean, are there other examples of just like staple meals that you whip up that the whole family can enjoy?
Well, I've already said one of them, which is our go-to. And it's interesting because I have one daughter who loves quinoa and another who despises it.
Oh,
and,
no.
But the one who despises quinoa really likes millet. So
they're so, so similar.
This time of year, there's, you know, a grain cooked that's in the refrigerator. And the value of having it cooked is that when you go to make your meal, you don't have to cook a grain. All you have to do is reconstitute it. Put it in a pan with a little bit of water and it heats up in, you know, a minute or two. And if you want to saute some greens or roast some vegetables, that's really our go-to meal with some avocado, pumpkin seeds. Sometimes we put hot sauce on it.
You're big on hot sauce.
Well, I have a kid who, I mean, honestly, will eat anything if I put hot sauce on it. So
what kind of hot sauce do you use?
She likes Cholula. And
really?
And I'm all for it. Yeah.
All right.
You know,
cool.
Someone once
You're
asked
cool
me,
mom.
Like, if you had one food and, you know, someone said to her she needed to eat kale. And first of all, I don't really feel you need to eat any one food in particular. But kale was certainly a trend for a really long time.
Yeah.
And people talked about, oh, if you're going to eat it, you should saute it in garlic with olive oil. Well, mm-hmm. Garlic is bitter, kale's bitter. Olive oil is bitter, and bitter is the one taste we eat the least of. So try giving that like big plate of bitter expectation to someone who's never had kale, and they're going to be like, you're out of your mind.
You're so right.
But if you take, you know, one leaf of kale and put it into that Campbell's soup that you are addicted to, you've now moved that Campbell's soup closer to the source. And it's the same thing with the hot sauce. If that's a taste you like, and I can introduce you to developing your palate for other tastes by adding the hot sauce to it, then mission accomplished.
Yes. Oh, this gets me so giddy because you're so right. This is exactly what it's about. Finding ways to incorporate what I call more plants into your diet. And it's just like you said, adding, you know, a leaf of kale into your Campbell's soup or whatever, like, or adding hot sauce on top of your kale if that's going to help you get it down, or blending it into a smoothie with banana so you don't even taste it. I mean, just finding ways to eat more plants is really the name of the game.
Yeah. You probably know, I have no culinary background, whereas you do. So you probably learned this in school.
Yeah.
But it took me years and years to figure out that when we cook, we change the properties of food. We change their nutritional values, sometimes increasing, sometimes decreasing. We change the texture. We change the taste. And it changes even more when they're paired with other foods. So I was teaching at a university locally last week, and we made a no recipe bar. So we basically just dumped everything in a bowl and stuck it together with nut butter.
Yum.
Somebody said in the first class, oh, I'm not going to eat that because we put coconut in it. I don't like coconut. I said, you should try it anyway. So the next time, the next class that came in, we made the exact same thing and I had them eat it first. And then once everybody was saying, oh, that was fantastic, I said, is there anybody here who doesn't like coconut? And two people raised their hand and I said, there was coconut in that. And they said, no way. I didn't even taste it. And so there's a really good example. It's not a coconut bar that they were eating, but the coconut just lended to the texture. So that judgment doesn't about food doesn't serve us. Just taste it every step of the way. And, you know, if there's something you don't like, chances are you probably just haven't had it made very well. So that's why I write books.
Oh my God. Your books, I'm not even just saying this because I know and love you, but your books are the best cookbooks on the market. Your recipes, I've never had one that wasn't a grand slam ever. And I've made hundreds of your recipes. Okay, that's an exaggeration. I've made multiple dozens of your recipes, and they're really, one is better than the next. So when you say you have no culinary background, That is not
okay,
real.
Training.
Fine, training. Fine, because you are as good in a kitchen as anyone, especially with plants and clean food. You really are phenomenal.
Well, you can't see me because we're on a podcast, but my hands are together and I'm. Oh, it's a deep bow.
It's true.
Thank you.
Oh, it's so true. So that said, I would love for you to just give us a one sentence summary of each of your three amazing books. Or two sentences.
Wow. Okay,
whatever you want. Sorry, just sum them up. Where should someone start with you?
Someone starts with Eat Clean, Live Well, because it is the most recent, it's the most relevant, and the most current. They're all organized by season, they're all vegan, they're all gluten-free, and they're all very accessible. But Eat Clean, Live Well reflects how I'm cooking right now. And the recipes stand on their own. And that umami taste, that is there at every turn. And it's lovely that it has lifestyle in it also, because, you know, when you're thinking about what you're putting in your body, you're also thinking about what you're putting on your body and, and how the water you're drinking and the air you're breathing and your environment. And, so it's just a really great resource. I'll move backwards. Clean Start with the second book and, you know, Quick, Easy Dive In, Instant Success, which I always think makes it sound like less of a book, but it was a James Beard finalist. So it's not less of a book. It's just really quick, easy, and phenomenal photography, I have to say. And then
and recipes.
First, thank you. And the first book, Clean Food.
Which is my favorite. Clean Food is my favorite.
It's kind of like the Bible.
Yeah.
I didn't sit down to write the book. I sat down and compiled the recipes and the stories and the information that kind of represented a very long journey to up until that point of figuring it out. And the night before Clean Food launched, I said to my mom, do you think the publisher read it? Because there's like kombu and umi plum vinegar and teff in here. And so, you know, at the end of that first week when it was on the bestseller list, it was really mind-boggling. And to this day, I think it's a tremendous book. But what I like best about it, while it talks about all these different questions that you've asked, organic, local, seasonal, you know, pH balance, how do I stock my pantry? How do I figure out what's right for me? It's different from anybody else. It's all in there. But I think my favorite part is the section that's called What's That? Which is talks about all the different ingredients. So when you see mirin in a recipe and you're scratching your head saying, this woman is out of her mind. I've never heard of this.
Which I felt when I was going through it the first time. I'm like, what the hell is that?
You can go to What's That and say, oh, it's a naturally fermented sweet cooking wine made from brown rice. And the nice thing about that is you can say, I have cooking wine, I'll just use this. But the fact that it says, but it's also naturally fermented and it's made from brown rice, and now you already know the benefits of fermentation because you've listened to this podcast, then you can say, well, next time I'll replace it with that. So it's, I think it educates and empowers you not to use the ingredients, but to make the choice of which ingredients are going to work for you.
I love that. And it's just, I mean, that one's a labor of love. You self-published it, right?
Self-published it, and yes. And
stacks that's of it in your garage.
3,000 books right in the garage.
Amazing.
I know it.
Amazing. Yes. Really incredible. So at the end of the day, you know, what if someone's listening to this and they're like, I am so stoked to start eating more clean, which I guarantee anyone who's listened to this is already eating what you would call and what I would call a clean food diet. I mean, you're eating a lot of plants if you're listening to this podcast, I assume. Mm-hmm. But if someone's like, I want to take it a step further, what do you think is a really good, you know, closing step from this conversation? Is it fermented food? Is it less processed food? Is it, you know, get more educated about your food source? What do you think is a really good takeaway?
Honestly, I think it's going to be different for each person, but
lame.
I think, and I know I'm really good at avoiding answers, aren't I?
I know.
But more than anything, I would say to look within for that answer. So maybe it's a deep breath, maybe it's journaling, maybe it's a walk in the woods. But when you can look within and say, what is it that I need? That I think is more empowering and more healing than the food itself. When you can say, even just slowing down so that if you didn't change anything that you ate, but you chewed more and you sat down to eat your meals, you'll get more nutrition out of what you're already eating. And so, you know, I think just breathing and maybe there's a meditation or maybe it's just listening and spending 5 minutes with deep breathing and letting everything down from the stress of the day, from the stress of our lives, is better for our health than probably anything that we can bring in. That spills into every other choice we make. So.
It's true. I couldn't agree more. I always say you're better off eating French fries with a smile than eating Brussels sprouts with a bitch face. Don't be resentful. Don't be stressed, right?
Absolutely.
So a few personal questions before I let you go back to eating your sauerkraut out of the jar with a fork. What is one of your favorite clean food or plant party restaurants besides your own kitchen?
Isn't that the truth? Well, there are two that come to mind immediately. So different. One is G-Zen in Branford, Connecticut. Mm-hmm. And the other is Candle 79. And okay. I think what I like about both, to be very honest, are the loving people.
Oh.
Because anybody can make vegan food, but you really taste when they put love in it. And those are people that have really resonated in my journey and I think really do a lovely job at that.
That's probably why all your food is so good.
Well, sometimes.
Sometimes there's stress.
When we remember to take that breath before we eat, we make the food. No.
Okay, good to know. Good to know. That's one ingredient I sometimes forget about. So what is your favorite plant to eat? It's a tough one for you, I'm sure.
Oh, that is a brutal question. I'm tongue-tied. Next.
Okay. What's your favorite piece of kitchen equipment or the one that you use most frequently?
Oh, my chef's knife.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say blender for some reason, but I guess chef knife makes sense.
No. I use my chef's knife for everything. I have very few other appliances. I don't have any gadgets or anything. I barely use measuring cups. But and when I first started cooking, I bought a food processor because I didn't know how to cut anything.
Yeah.
And I just processed everything and threw it in a pot. And I ended up eating a lot of soup because that's kind of what you ended up with.
Yeah. Do you have one book aside from your own that has really positively impacted your life in some awesome way?
Does it have to be one? Can I say two?
Sure.
Nourishing Wisdom. Okay. And by Mark David. And The Soul of Money.
Oh.
I can't not remember her name
off the top
of my head. But just a reminder of what it's all about. And the point of living well and of connecting with others and creating a good place. So
I love
both
it.
Of those.
Right. Because for you, you're saying it's not even though you're all about the food, it's not even all about the food. It's about, what it's all about, living well and taking care of yourself and being the highest version of yourself you can be.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Cool. So besides Amazon, where can people go to find everything about eating cleaner and Terry Walters?
All my books are available at Barnes & Noble. And, I'd like to say wherever books are sold within reason. And
or are they not on Amazon?
Oh, no, they're on Amazon.
Oh, they're on Amazon.
And but they're all on Barnes & Noble. And I have an affinity to Barnes & Noble because they've been so supportive. So, I think they're usually the same price. And we need stores because it makes a really big difference. I mean, you can buy it online at Amazon, and you can buy it online at Barnes & Noble. But if Amazon puts everybody out of business, there's going to be no bookstore for you to go to and flip through the pages of mine or anybody else's books. And sometimes that is the very act that starts the process. So I think that's just really important to have the place where we can find those books and touch them and feel the energy and know whether they speak to us or not before we buy them.
Yeah. And maybe one will just fall off the shelf and it'll be the one you're meant to pick up.
Yeah. And hopefully it'll be mine.
Yes, it will.
I'm a realist.
Yes, you are. And terrywalters.net is your home base on the web, right?
Yes.
.net.
.net.
Why not com?
Because it wasn't available and I'm too cheap to buy it. If you look up clean food, you cannot really miss me.
I'm sure that's Googled a million times every day. So bringing us full circle that you are the queen of clean food. We're so grateful for your time. I'm so grateful for your time and your recipes. And thank you so much for creating this massive, massive ripple effect in the world. You're amazing.
And thank you for getting it out there.
Thanks for listening to the Party in My Plants podcast. I hope you feel so much more clear about clean eating and slightly less afraid of fermenting. If you know one other person who'd like this show in their ears, share it with them. And for a summary of everything we spoke about, plus so much more that makes healthy living and clean eating not suck, go to partyinmyplants.com/7.